That was a poetic Swami Advaitmananda, you know. That was my first exposure to his poetry. Om Sahana Vavatu, Sahana Bhunaktu, Sahaviryam Karavavahai, Tejasvina Vadhitamastuma Vidvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Living objectively. That's the title of our topic, title of our talk this evening. Living objectively. So when we use the word objective, it contrasts with another word called subjective. The question of objectivity comes when there is subjectivity. To give you a standard example of Vedanta, of an objective perception and a subjective perception. In Vedanta, they give the example of a rope snake. What is this rope snake? Imagine you taking a walk in the garden in the evening, and it's like evening is coming up, sun is almost sun is set, there is twilight situation. And in garden while walking, you see a snake on the side and you get scared. So when you see a snake, naturally there's fear, palpitation, you are scared, and all of a sudden you stop proceeding further. Then a friend who was also walking with you comes from behind. What happened, Swami? Why didn't you stop? For a minute I couldn't say anything. What happened? A snake. My friend had better eyes. And he also happened to have a torchlight. And he just showed the torchlight. It turned out to be a rope. In fact, what was there was a piece of rope. But perhaps because of inadequate light, because of some difficulties in my sight, or because of what was going on in my mind, can be various factors, because of which I perceive that object as a snake. In Vedanta, we call it rope snake. What is a rope snake? You perceive a snake, where in fact there is a rope. So a sudden response came out from me of fear. And any corresponding reactions in my body in terms of palpitations, in my mind also, a desire to run away from there. These kind of reactions came in my mind because I perceived that object as a snake. When the torchlight was shown, and when I discovered that in fact it was just a piece of rope, then all those things disappeared. Because rope is an innocent thing. Rope would not cause any fear, etc. in my mind. So seeing that object as a rope is seeing what it really is. Perceiving or seeing the object as rope is perceiving as it is. Whereas, when I see the object as a snake, you know what is happening? I do not see the object as it is. But I superimpose something upon the object. I superimpose or project or imagine a snake upon that object. So now there are two perceptions of that object. One is that it is a rope, other is that it is a snake. That it is raw is a perception in keeping with reality of that object. And then we will call it objective perception. Seeing the object as it is. On the other hand, seeing that object a snake is my personal projection. It's called subjective projection. Because it is likely that someone else might see maybe a garland there. Someone else may see a stick there. Meaning that it is possible that different people may project different things depending upon their mind. All of this would be what we call subjective perception. What is subjective perception? When I project something from my own mind and not see the object as it is, but see it in the light of projection of my mind. So what is caused in our mind is fear and an aversion for that object which is a snake. Another example that Vedantins give is sometimes when taking a walk along a beach. Once while taking a walk, I was feeling hungry, didn't have any money in my pocket, and I just happened to see a silver coin lying in the sand. I bent down, took around, there's nobody. Bent down to pick up that silver coin. You know what it turned out to be? It turned out to be a piece of shell. What happened is, because some sand particles were sticking to the shell and they were glittering in the light of sun. And because of that glitter, I thought it was a piece of silver. So what was there was a shell. What I saw there was a silver coin. Seeing silver where there is shell. Again, seeing that object as shell is objective perception. Seeing that as silver is subjective perception. The reason why I gave these two examples is that seeing that rope as a snake causes in me a dislike, aversion, desire to run away, desire to reject, desire to avoid and give up that thing. And seeing a shell as silver creates in me a desire, it attracts me, I'm attracted towards them, it creates a desire to acquire it, possess it. If I had seen those objects as they were, none of these reactions would have been created. Meaning that if I had seen the rope as a rope, there would not have been any aversion because I have no aversion for rope. It doesn't cause any harm to me. Similarly also, if I have seen the shell as a shell, there will be no attraction because shell doesn't have any attraction in my mind. So aversion created by rope or attraction created, actually aversion is created for snake, but reality I have aversion for that object which in reality is rope, so you can say that I have an aversion for rope because I see the rope not as a rope but see as a snake, and I have an attraction towards that piece of shell because I do not see the shell, I see the silver. You know, this attraction and aversion. Aversion is created in my mind for what doesn't deserve the aversion if I had known it for what it is. Attraction is created in my mind for what doesn't deserve attraction if I had known that object for what it is. Meaning that the way I react to that object is quite different from what that object and reality would create in my mind. This is called reaction. Seeing the snake, I want to run away is a reaction. Seeing the silver, I bend down to pick it up is a reaction. Because had I seen the object as a rope, I would not have run away. Had I seen the object as a shell, I would not have been attracted. So what's going on, Swami? What are you talking? Why are you talking about? What's the reason for these examples? These are the examples for what we call attraction and aversion. When I fail to see an object for what it is, and I project something in my mind and see it differently, then an attraction can be created for an object which doesn't have any qualification for attraction. And similarly, aversion is created for something that does not, if there is a real snake, there is no aversion, is understandable. There is real silver, attraction, understandable. But I have attraction and aversion for not what it is, for the way I perceive them. We call it projection, imagination. That I project something which is not there on the rope, see the snake and have aversion. I project something on the shell which is not there, with silver, have an attraction. Now, if you look at our day-to-day interaction with the world, with people and things, you'll find that more often than not, either I have an attraction for something or I have an aversion for something. I like something or I dislike something. And my response to a thing is determined not by what it is, but it is determined by the way I perceive that. The way I relate to something is not determined by what that thing is, it is determined by how I perceive it. Meaning that I do not relate to the world as it is, but I relate to the world as I perceive it. You follow? That's how life is. A person comes before me and somehow a reaction comes. Watch out! Beware! So looks to me like he's somebody to be beware of. And I behave in some way. See, other person, oh, he's a very nice person, but I behave in some way. So my behavior is, now somebody else may look upon that person in a different way and behave in a different way. So we seem to respond different, say different people respond to the same thing in different ways. Same person may invoke different kind of responses from different people. Some people think he's good, some people think he's bad, some people like him, some dislike him, some embrace him, some reject him. How can it be? How come that different people react differently to the same thing? How one thing alone causes different kinds of responses on different people? That some people are attracted, some people like it, some people hate him. Because they perceive the same entity or same person in different ways. So what I'm trying to point out here is that there is something which is really there and I have a perception of that. It is possible that I may perceive the thing as it is, in which case my response would be appropriate. But if I perceive an object or a person or something as different from what it is, then my response will not be to really what it is. My response will be to what I project there, what I imagine there. And that response will be wrong. It will not do justice to that person. Because I hate that person, even though that person doesn't have something that is hateful. Or I'm attracted to a person, even though person may not have something for which requires, you know, which calls for attraction. So Vedanta teaches that most of our interactions, most of our responses are determined not by what the things are, but the way I perceive them. I may have a tremendous attraction for money, then my relation with money or wealth is one kind. Somebody may not have that attraction. Then the same person responds differently to money. we find different people responding differently because they have different perceptions of the same things. All right, so what's the big deal, Swamiji? Big deal is that this attractions and aversion, the attachment and aversion, the likes and dislikes, is basically what governs the way I interact with the world. Meaning that I live in my own world of likes and dislikes or attachments and aversions. And more often than not, I do not see the world as it is. I see it in my own projection of likes and dislikes. This is our nature. To relate to something either with likes or dislikes. I hate it, I love it. So, other day while distributing fruits, you know, in a basket, and people were lining up, I was giving, this is called prasad. Whatever comes in my hand, I give them. And a child was also walking by. A banana came in my hand, I gave him. Swamiji, can I have an orange? Yeah, but why? I hate banana, he says, you know. Why do you hate it? I hate it. Why do you hate it? I hate it. Orange, I love orange. So, with banana, this hatred and love, both of these are projections of our mind. Meaning that whenever we relate to something, either because I am attached to that, I love it, or I hate it, both of these are the reactions. Both of these are what we call a result of subjective perception. It is subjective living and not objective living. If you really examine our responses to what we encounter, it is my mood that determines how I respond or how I relate to a person, rather than what in fact the person is or what the situation calls for. Meaning that we more often react to a situation rather than action. Action and reaction. What is action? When I respond to something as it is. What is reaction? When I respond to something, then imagine what it is. And these likes and dislikes, therefore, also cause when I act out of anger, for example. Now, I don't see the person as the person is. I act because I see the person. I think he is guilty. I see the person is guilty. I see that person as dishonest. I see person in a bad light and I respond with anger. Some other person I see is all wonderful person. Again, that may be my projection. So, objective living is living with the world as the world is. Objective living is even living, seeing myself as I am, and seeing the world as it is, then we are living the world as the world is. Otherwise, more often than not, we are living in our own world of creation, of projections of our mind. And the mind has a habit to project because our insecurities, our fears, our insecurities, our desires, our cravings, these influence my mind and make my mind project and see what is not there. So when there is craving in my mind, then I see something very attractive in that object and then therefore I go after that. When on the other hand there is anger in my mind, that I see something that is harmful in that and I treat that way. So if we see our life, the conflicts that are created in our day-to-day relationships, the appointments and disappointments that are created is more on account of our subjective perception rather than the objective perception. when I'm insecure, then everything looks like threatening me. When I'm hurt, then looks like this, you know, when I'm a hurt person, then looks like people are out there to hurt me, to insult me. So thus, Vedanta explains to us that all our unhappiness or sorrow comes from these likes and dislikes. Meaning that if we live the life and relate to the thing as they are, then life will be beautiful. The reason why we have sorrow or unhappiness in our life is because we do not relate to the things as they are, but we relate to them in a subjective manner. We always project. That is why, same object, I love orange, somebody says, I hate orange. Orange is orange. I love something, I hate something. And then what happens is, there is no also consistency. Today what I love, tomorrow I may hate also. And today what I hate, I may love tomorrow. So Swami used to say, these two persons met each other, they fell in love with each other. They say, I love you, I love you, I love you. After some time he says, I love you, I love you, I love you. Is one perception because of which I love. The perception changes, now I allow. Person may be the same, but my perception changes. So understand that we generally live our life based on this habit of projection of the mind, and we color the things, we as though wear the glasses of these likes and dislikes and color the things and see them in that color rather than what the things are. So objective living is seeing things as they are. So Vedanta talks about two kinds of creations. This creation, the universe, we call it creation by Ishvara, by God, by Lord. If you don't believe in God, then you can, whatever it is creation, I have not done it. So we say Ishvara has created, it is Ishvara's creation. Ishvara Srishti or creation of Ishvara. Others call Jiva Srishti or creation of an individual. There are two kinds of creations, Ishvara Srishti and Jiva Srishti. Creation by Ishvara and creation by an individual. So what I confront is creation by Ishvara. And the way I confront is I project upon that my own creation and then I respond. So that is how something attracts me and something creates an aversion from me. These attractions and aversions both are due to the projection of my mind. And they cause all kinds of unhappiness and sorrow in our mind. Thus, we are taught what is called objective living. In short, what we need to do is to live a life wherein we progressively become free from these projections and slowly start relating to things as they are. But how are they? When you say Ishvara's creation, when you say that the world is created by Ishvara, what is that world? How should I be responding to it? Let us say that what is, I'll give you one formula. What is in order. What is all right in its own time and place and situation. When I find things are not in order, then I react in a certain way. To see the order in what is. Lord Krishna says, let me give you an example. When I make an effort, there is an outcome. There is effort and outcome. Please tell me, is outcome a success or a failure? I make an effort. There is an outcome. Is it called success or failure? What would you call it? Let us say that I appeared in a test. And I scored out of 1600 in SAT, I scored, say, 1450. Is it called success or a failure? What do you call it? We always call it something. We don't only say, I passed the test. I succeeded or I failed. Is that it? What it is an outcome. You know what I call it? Success, failure. No, that is my personal projection. What is success? If I expected to score 1200 points and I got 1450, wow, I'm elated. On the other hand, if I expected 1550 and I got 1450, I'm depressed. Same outcome. Somebody calls it success, somebody calls it failure. You know very well, in India also we have all these tests, and some of our people and their children are there appearing for the high school examination, and this is a very bright person, and we expected that he will score in the whole board. And here is another fellow who hardly studies. I never expected the fellow will even pass. When the results came, then I call that person, this boy who I expected, how are you doing? What is the result? Oh, Swamiji, I'm most miserable. I'm frustrated. What happened? I just got 95% points. 95%? Yeah, but I expected 98. I'm no good. Other fellow called me on his own. Swamiji, I'm offering a party this evening. What happened to you? I passed. What is your score? 40%. When he expected 30%. So for somebody, 40% is success. For somebody, 95% is failure. So what is success and what is failure? Nothing but my projection, is it not so? So I respond not to what is, the way I perceive that. Now you treat me in a certain way, I interpret. So Swami just now spoke about me. I know Swamiji is very respectful to me. Or, if I expected something more, I say, you didn't say this, you didn't. Same thing can be interpreted by me as an honor or dishonor, depending upon what my expectation is. So, honor and dishonor. What is what Swamiji say. That's objective. How I perceive it as honor or dishonor. What is an outcome of an effort. What I perceive is success or failure. What is an honor, dishonor, success, failure. You are praising me, you are censuring me. So, praise and censure, success and failure, honor and dishonor, comfort and discomfort. Swami, your seat is comfortable? Depends on my mood. Same thing, very comfortable. Tomorrow you give me the same seat. What is this? Uncomfortable. So, comfort and discomfort. Success and failure. Honor and dishonor. These are called pairs of opposites. All of these are what? Not the reality. What it is the way I perceive that reality. I perceive that event. Is it not so? And I react depending on what my perception is. So, one teaching of Bhagavad Gita, and that affects our mind. Is success also ultimately? You find, Swami, failure is a bad, wrong, bad reaction. But success is good, is it not? Well, I don't know how good success is. Because today 95% is success for me. And everybody congratulates me. So next year then my scale goes up. This year also only 95%. I thought you will get 98%. When we used to take our scorecard to our father, and with all, you know, I scored 85%. That's all, not 90%. So, Because he expects me to be always on the top, therefore every time that scale goes up. And what is success this year, if I score the same, it will not be success next year. Because in my own perception, what is success keeps on changing. Is it not so? Who is a wealthy person? I want to be a wealthy person. I want to be a millionaire. When I become a millionaire, for a few days I think I'm very wealthy. Then I see other millionaires, there are so many in this Silicon Valley, this, that and so forth. Then 1 million, no, 2 millions. 10 million. How many billionaires are there? How I find myself all the time changing the scale of what is a wealthy person, who is a successful person. In fact, I keep on projecting different kinds of scales upon myself and I drive myself. In fact, 1 million is quite plenty for me for living a comfortable life. I can have a Tesla, I can have all kinds of things that I want. But now, somebody has 2 million, I should have 3 million, somebody has 5 million, I should have. So, whether I'm adequate or not adequate, who decides? My projection decides. So thus we are driven by a thing, nobody else drives me. My own mind drives me depending upon what I project. Success is a subjective idea. Failure is a subjective idea. Honor is a subjective idea. Dishonor is a subjective idea. Praise is a subjective idea. Censure, same thing. Somebody will interpret as praise, somebody may not. Same thing, somebody interprets success, somebody does not. And thus we keep on reacting either with elation or depression. If I brand it as success, I am elated. I brand it as failure, I am depressed. So elation and depression, both of these are nothing but manifestations of sorrow. No, Swamiji, elation is not so, I am elated. Just so this is the preparation for depression. Because my scale will go up. It will further go up and I will drive myself to a point when I will then brand myself inadequate or success. So this is how we live in these projections. We brand everything. That also is all right. Even branding, that is also not a problem. This is a failure. You brand that outcome as a failure. You know what we further do? I made an effort, there is an outcome, you call it success or failure. You know what we do further? I branded myself. I succeeded, I failed. See the difference here. The effort succeeded or effort failed is a reality. We don't deny that, suppose. But then what do I say? I succeeded. I failed. This is called projection. So whenever I connect things with I, that is when the reaction is created of what? Elation or depression. And this is what? This is called a sorrow. A life of human being is a life of reaction and therefore a life of sorrow and therefore all stresses and tension. Even if I get success, immediately now next is next problem. What am I going to do with this result? Or better result? How to remain successful? Can I drive myself to remain successful? My definition of success changes. Again I drive further. So how stresses and strains are created not for what life is, but the way I perceive life, and more than that, the way I perceive myself in reference to what is happening around me. Because not only we brand what is out there, but there is, I brand myself also as a success, as a failure, as good, as bad, as inadequate, inadequate, right, wrong. I keep on judging myself, meaning that I am also subjective with reference to my own self. And all of our sorrow comes from our perception of ourselves. And all the time my perception of myself is a projection, and therefore every perception causes sorrow. So that is how Vedanta explains that the cause of sorrow is not out there. Sorrow is centered on I, it is not centered on someone else. Even though it is my habit to always blame somebody else for my sorrow, because that person did something, therefore I am sad. He did something, therefore I am sad. So once our Swami was saying, when people were sitting before the class, he was just chatting with some people, sitting in front row, says, "You look a little sad this morning. What's the matter?" "Swamiji, I have not received a letter from my parents for 3 months. "You also seem sad. What's the matter?" "Swamiji, I received a letter in the morning." "You seem to be a little bad and happy." "Swamiji, I am not able to get married." "What about you?" "I am married." "What's your problem?" "I don't have children." "What is your problem?" "I have children." Meaning that in my perception, it is someone else who is always responsible for making me unhappy. In fact, what did is keep on pushing buttons within me, and therefore the potential of unhappiness is right within myself. So living objectively is becoming free from those buttons, so that I become free and I can live the life freely without causing any sorrow or unhappiness. So living objectively is seeing things as they are, is greeting as they are. So Lord Krishna says, develop the equanimity of the mind. Meaning that maintain equanimity, freedom from reaction. But Swamiji, when success comes, then how can I, and failure, that totally, Lord Krishna says, in success and failure, maintain equanimity of the mind. Meaning that, look upon success and failure as equal. Then you cannot, can you? Success is success and failure is failure. Are they equal? Is there something common in both of them? What is equal, you know? Both of them are outcome of an effort. When do they become unequal? When I brand myself as successful or failure. That is when they become unequal. Otherwise, something happened. I did something. It did not work out. Okay. That doesn't make me sad. But I failed. That is what makes me sad. I succeeded. That is what makes me elated. So Lord Krishna says that this is called projection. This effort was made, effort succeeded. Effort was made, effort failed. This is called objective, being about. And subjective is when I project it upon myself and I judge myself. But Swamiji, even if I do not judge myself, failure is a failure, is it not so? But it will not make you sad. Then you will be objective. Okay, this did not succeed. What can I do now? Next time, what do I learn from this? If I do not react, then if I am objective, maintain an equanimous state of the mind, then I am able to learn from what happened and I can proceed further. But when I become depressed, then I cannot learn from that. I cannot grow. And thus, becoming free from depression and elation, maintaining an equanimity or cheerfulness of the mind. So this is what is taught by the Bhagavad Gita. Living objectively is seeing things as they are. We are not saying that, see success where there is failure. See failure where there is success. See success where there is success. See failure where there is failure. But then don't brand yourself as successful, because you are not successful. Failure and effort is success. But Swami, I made the effort. Then am I not failure? You made an effort for all success. But it is true that the only effort is in your control. The outcome is not in your control. That's also reality, is it not so? The reality is that I control something and I do not control something else. The effort I control, the outcome I do not control. You want to take responsibility? Take responsibility of effort. Don't take responsibility which doesn't belong to you. So Lord Krishna said, don't take unnecessary responsibility. Take responsibility where it belongs. So karmanyavadikaraste, you take responsibility for your effort. Ma phaleshu kadachana, do not take responsibility for the outcome. God, give me serenity to accept gracefully what I cannot change. Give me courage to change what I can. Give me the wisdom to know the difference between the two. So Lord Krishna provides wisdom. What's the wisdom? In what I can change, what I cannot change. The effort is in my control. I must have courage to make the right kind of effort. The outcome is not in my control. Therefore, I have to learn to gracefully accept it without a reaction. What courage is required in effort, Swami? Now, when I make an effort, also there is a choice. Human mind has a choice. What's the choice? When I make an effort, then I show courage. When what is to do, what is in my control? What's the courage? When I make an effort, there is a choice. What's the choice? To do what is right or do what I like. To do what is right or to do what is convenient. You follow? Sometimes what is right is not always convenient. Sometimes what is right, what is proper, is rather very inconvenient. So we take shortcuts. We compromise. So very often we compromise the quality. We compromise the values. To be always honest is very inconvenient, Swami. Sometimes I compromise. Sometimes I tell a little lie. Sometimes I cheat. So thus compromising the values. So what doing what is right is following the values of life when we make an effort. So what is meant by taking responsibility in making effort is doing what is right. What is right is making an effort in keeping with the values of life. Then I remain objective. Because that is when what I am doing is right. What is meant by right is then I am in harmony with the prevailing moral order. So when we follow that moral order in our life, then we are objective. Because we are in harmony with the reality. When I violate the moral order, then I am projecting, I am not in harmony. So while making an effort, what is meant by living objectively is make an effort or perform your action in keeping with the basic values of life. What is basic value? Being honest, hardworking, fair, kind. It's basic value. When it comes to outcome, I cannot control. Because outcome is determined by many factors other than my own effort. For example, when I'm shooting an arrow from a bow, then there is a target which I want to shoot, and I make the best effort to hit the target. That is my responsibility. That when I shoot an arrow, what is my responsibility? To make the best effort so that I hit the target. That is my goal. That's my responsibility. Meaning that I may acquire right skill and what is required in order to achieve that goal. But once the arrow is released from my bow, it is no more under my control. And where it will fall is not determined merely by me, but by the laws of nature and many other unforeseen factors, such as some gust of wind and various things may decide where the arrow actually falls. Is it not so? Otherwise, everybody would be an Olympic champion, isn't it? All shooters will be Olympic champions. If they could decide what the outcome is, and there will be no failure at all, everybody will be champion. Unfortunately, we can't decide what. So you shoot the ball in whether it's a soccer game, whatever. You shoot in one way, it goes some other way. So we know very well that what we can control is effort. But the outcome, we do not control. So what should I do? Should I brand myself for the outcome? When outcome is failure, you know what I do? I brand myself as a failure. Lord Krishna says, no. Accept it gracefully. Then the outcome is failure. I did the best I could do and I gracefully accept the outcome without branding myself, without branding anybody, without blaming and branding. When I accept a situation, that is called an objective response. When I blame somebody, either I blame myself or blame somebody, that is the reaction. When I maintain that objective frame of mind, then this happened. They used to tell us a story, which is a story of a very mature philosopher. This man was a Greek philosopher. And he was living with his family in an island in Greece. And he was a businessman also, and he decided to relocate to a distant island to start his business there because not working out very well here. So he left his family here and his everything. He himself went to other island. In a few years he built up a business, and now he is in a position to invite his family where he is. So his family is coming now to him. All of them are traveling in a big ship with all their belongings and the whole family. They're all coming. He's expecting them to reach on any day. One afternoon, there's a knock on the door. So a messenger is there. He expected to have the news about the ship. When is it reaching? Sir, that messenger was breathless. So, sir, your ship has sunk. What? Your ship has sunk. All right. Sir, all your wealth is drowned. You are a pauper. What? You are a pauper. All right. Your family is drowned. You are a widower. You are an orphan. What? All right. Then all right is what is the reaction? All right is an action or proper response. When he says what, it is not that he has not heard, but that momentarily he was not willing to accept the reality. And then he realized in a moment that this is reality. There is nothing I can do about it. And therefore, graceful acceptance as in here, and then he will say, in India, he will say, Hari Icha, all day, as the Ishvara wants. I lost this, Hari Icha. Suppose you cry and you react and whatever you do, you cannot change what has happened. Meaning that outcome is something we do not control, and therefore, accepting gracefully is living objectively with reference to outcome and doing what is right is living objectively in reference to effort. And thus we train ourselves to become free from reactions. And as the mind starts becoming free from the habit of react, then it becomes clearer and clearer, less and less projecting, and I become more and more in tune with reality. You know then what I find? When my mind becomes free from all reactions, when it sees things as they are, you know what it says? That everything is in order. Everything is good as it is. Everything is beautiful as it is. Because what is creation of Ishvara. And then what is beautiful. No, Swami, this is not beautiful. It's beautiful only when it is like this. A fresh flower is beautiful. A dry flower is not beautiful. Now, what is beautiful? Again, projection of my mind. Something I call beautiful, something I don't call beautiful. The other day, I was leaving for work in the morning, and I was reading some little printed piece of paper. I read it, and I just folded it in and then went out and threw it out on the street as we normally do there, threw away. And that evening when I returned home, I saw that there was a new piece of art in the home. hey, this is beautiful. When did you bring it? Then I was told, you know what this is? Then I looked closely. You know what it was? Same crumpled piece of paper. But somebody had nicely framed it with a nice little background and presented. How beautiful. So what is ugly and what is beautiful? All of these are projections. What it is beautiful. It requires the given mind to see the beauty in something. And that is how we acquire a non-reacting mind. It's a mind that sees the harmony and beauty that is there everywhere. What is beautiful? No, Swamiji, only black is beautiful, white is beautiful, and this is beautiful. So, when they describe beauty in Indian poetry, what is beauty? A woman's face is compared to a moon. If a woman's face is like that of a moon, she's a beautiful woman. It's like everywhere there are kind of things, you know, that you are beautiful provided you have this description. And so we try to become that again. What is beautiful? When my mind becomes free from projection, then I say everything is beautiful, everything is in harmony, everything is in order. In that case, I'm always happy with what is. Today, I'm not happy with what is. Today you serve me food, then I say, please bring me salt. Please bring me black pepper. Please this. I change everything. Whatever is given to me, I change. Food is one example. Everything. Because I'm hardly able to enjoy things as they are. I must always twist them, manipulate them, turn around in order to make them enjoyable from me. That's all because of my reactions. As the mind becomes free, then it's able to contact what is. And what is beauty? What is all manifestation of Ishwara beauty, which is I become more and more in contact with the reality, with more and more the beauty of life and the happiness in life. Thus, living objectively is living a life of non-reacting life, which is what happens when I stop projecting, which is what happens when I am able to see things as they are, for which I need to practice because I have a habit of projecting. So two things we said this evening. One is, while doing anything, I make sure that I do what is right, what is appropriate for the situation, what is the right response for me. And by responding to situation, I respond it as something which is in order, something which is appropriate. So, effort and outcome. In fact, what I confront every morning is an outcome. You know, what they explain is, what I confront is the result of my past action. So, it's all karma phala, it's all result of an action. So, whatever I confront is an outcome which I do not control. So, do not control, accept it gracefully, accept it happily. So, learn to enjoy what is what happens as I become more and more objective. And if you enjoy what is, then what else do you need? If you enjoy what is there, if you enjoy what you are, then what do you need to be happy? Then if you have a motor car, it's a luxury. You need not have anything to be happy. If you have, then what you have is a luxury. Right now, all those are necessities. But then, the extent to which I am able to enjoy what is, everything becomes a luxury. So that's how a wise person is described. For him, everything is luxury. Today, we keep on increasing our necessities more and more. Now, necessities become luxuries and luxuries and luxuries. Because you are happy with what is. So this is the direction in which we proceed as we become more and more objective in our living. Okay, I'll conclude here. And if there are any questions, let's go ahead.
Unfortunately, we don't have a second microphone. And so if you do have questions, just please stand up and
speak a little loudly.
And don't be shy.
Yes.
So you said, I'm really new to all this, but you said hard work, honesty, hard work,
fairness
and kindness.
When you do something in your effort. And graceful acceptance of what you encounter. Because you not created it. You cannot change it. And so there is no point in being sad about what you cannot create or what you cannot change. So graceful acceptance of what I cannot change and doing right where I can change. Yes.
But I can always aim for heart to work on my focus, right?
Yes, you can always aim for high. Surely. You can always aim for growth that you can build upon your abilities, your capacities, your skills, and so you can perform better and better. You can produce more and more. Now, that's a good question. That yes, you aim for high so that you can. Now, what will be the purpose of doing that? I'm not saying you should not aim for high, but what will be the purpose of aiming for the high? Yes, I am a millionaire, I will aim for, say, 2 million, which is fair. What will be the purpose of that?
Lots of things have, that's how a lot of research has done, but you go and work hard and you find something interesting. I think that's probably more creative, we become sometimes.
So again, being objective will also involve or include this aspect. That I will aim high so that I can produce more, so that I can contribute more. Your aiming high and hard work, all of these will really become meaningful. If you are aiming high for your own self, it only raises your ego and becomes a burden to you. If you're aiming high, so you can be a better contributor, then it helps in your inner growth as well. So do aim high, but not simply for gratification of ego, for being a better contributor. Yes, sir.
Thank you for the lecture. Inspired action.
So question is, inspired action without the consideration of result, is that what you say? Yeah. Now let us understand what is meant by result. Whenever you perform an action, there is always a purpose. There cannot be purposeless action. When you perform an action, there is a purpose. Meaning that you have a certain goal in mind. And then only you can perform the action. What is meant by detachment from the result is willingness to gracefully accept whatever outcome comes. You want a certain outcome for which you perform an action. When the outcome really comes, then realize that you are not the only controlling factor. There are factors other than you that control the outcome. And therefore, in all humility, accept that outcome with gracefulness. So this is what is expected with reference to. So in that case, you will not judge yourself. And success comes, then also you should be humble. That I am grateful that this result came. Because there are factors which were favorable to me. So I was favored because which success came. Some factors did not favor me, therefore success did not come. So both success and failure, both of them are attributed to those factors. I take neither the credit for success nor a blame for failure. So then what is much, there's no fun then. If you don't take credit, then what's the fun? Then there's no excitement. No, excitement can be, as he said, just the very effort itself. So Lord Krishna says that enjoy the very effort. The outcome will not remain very important to you if you enjoy that very effort. Because basically what we are seeking is happiness. Normally we seek happiness from outcome. That if a favorable outcome comes, then I'm happy. If it does not come, I'm unhappy. But it is in future, uncertain, unpredictable, which means that I am postponing my happiness to uncertain future factor. What is presently there is effort. So if I learn to enjoy that effort, it would not matter to me what the outcome is. Then you are enjoying what is. Because effort is what is in the present. So you shoot high. So you can contribute better. And while doing what you are doing, we learn to enjoy what we are doing. Then outcome will not be of that consequence to me. I will not be devastated when I do not get what I want. Because action gave me what I want. Ultimately, what I want is happiness. If action gives me the happiness, that outcome will not become that important to me. I will learn from outcome so that I can perform action, you know, better. That certainly is there, but will not get devastated. All these tension and stresses are because of outcome. Most of the stresses are because my sense of well-being, my sense of self-respect, my sense of success depends on outcome. I judge myself that way. And therefore, what will happen? Always the stress. Will I get what I want or not? What if I do not get? Not that outcome we don't worry about. We learn and we want to do better. But I judge not by outcome. I judge myself. Then my mind is open to receive as it comes. Yes, it happens. The ship sank. Why? I can't help it. That's what it is. And so I learn to gracefully accept that also. You know, in India, many years ago, there was an election in Delhi. Yeah, Delhi is a separate constituency. And this party was a ruling party. And they were going to win the election. And they lost the election. What happened, you know? In the last few days, the onion prices rose high. And a lot of poor people depend upon onions. And because the prices went up, they all voted against this fellow. And they lost the election. You can lose the election because of onion, you have not done anything. But that can happen, you know. So, this is actually what happened. Yes, sir.
I have a question. I like the concept, the idea, you know, to attach to the outcome, but the moment you don't live by yourself in the woods, you're married, you know, you have a job, you have colleagues, or your boss has expectation on your work, I think it would be very difficult if you put in your best effort, but they have another value system and think, let's say, the report you created is bad, you know, so, and you get all this feedback back from different people. So do you have any advice, you know, in the practical life, you know, living with others, when you have to deliver something and, you know, it's not what they expect, what it should be, even you put in your best effort and you're happy with what you deliver, but your wife, your kids, your boss, they see it in a totally different light?
Yes. So one thing here is, we said that willingness to gracefully accept the outcome, his point is that I am judged by, even though you ask me not to judge myself by outcome, judge myself by the effort, But the world judges me by outcome. The world and my boss, and even in case of his wife or whoever it is, you know, they judge me not by my effort, they judge me by my outcome. What am I supposed to do? We accept that reality. Meaning that we do respect the outcome, we want the best outcome and we make an effort for the best outcome, no question. But in spite of making best effort, if you don't get the outcome, what can you do? You know, you have done the best that you can do. It is true that we do not spare any effort as far as our effort is concerned, but you can do the best and still the outcome does not come. You learn and see how to do better, but there is no point in breaking your head against something that you cannot change. Yes, I understand that the boss will do what he does or she does or whatever. I gracefully accept that also. Because I understand that they have their own criteria of judging a person. And the world judges us by our performance. I'll accept it. But we should judge ourselves by our effort. While remaining sensitive to the world, accepting their framework, that I try to do the best even from the standpoint of world, but as I said, outcome I cannot control. So it is, I should not judge myself. I can understand my boss judge me in such a certain manner. I do not judge. Understand that it is not so much by what my boss judges, as much as what how I judge myself is very important. So boss says, judge, all right, what can I do next? If I not judge myself, I not become depressed, then I maintain a certain kind of objective frame of mind from which I can learn and I can do better. But if I get depressed because I judge myself failure, I can't even learn and become diffident. Moment I start judging myself failure, then I'm always concerned, what will happen next time? What will happen next time? I become diffident, lose self-confidence. But if I'm objective, that I have done the best I can do, and still result is there is no reason for me to judge myself. Then I examine, is there something I can do with it? Can I improve up my effort? How come the result did not come the way I expected? Is it because there was some lack in my effort? Is it that I did not have enough information? Is it because I did not take various means of account? Where did we go wrong? Learn and make effort, better effort next time. All this will happen if you maintain a equanimous frame of mind. When you enjoy that poise in the mind, if you are disappointed and frustrated, then we are not objective, then we judge everything also differently. You follow what I am saying? So yes, you are right that they will judge you that way. And we do what we can do with them. But at least we do not judge ourselves as failure. But let me ask you this question. What can you do? You are doing the best that you can do. That you are doing already. That is our commitment. My commitment is to do the best I can. My commitment also is to learn what is necessary to equip myself with the skills and make the best effort that I can. That is my commitment. In spite of that, if the outcome doesn't come, and it means, what will you do? Because divorce doesn't depend upon you, it depends upon the spouse. We will accept that also. Maybe it's good riddance, who knows? I don't know. But anyway, we accept it. You know, it's a gift of our God, whatever it is. What's the point in living with a person with all the judging us all the time? And even if you become successful, then expectation will increase. And you judge again. If you meet with that expectation will increase until a time comes when you'll be declared failure anyway. It is difficult to live with people who are always judgmental. Well, world is judgmental, no doubt. But if we are not judgmental, then we can maintain a reasonable, objective frame of mind. Then we will be able to reason with them, with the spouse also. Look, this is what is this. And you know, the outcome is determined by so many factors, and we can explain to them if we are in a proper frame of mind. They will save you from divorce. Any other question? You have something?
How to develop this objective perception? What sort of efforts or practices should one take to heighten the development of this objective perception? Because the whole problem lies in the perception.
Right. So that is why we gave two two situations. One is effort. How do we objective with reference to effort? Objectivity with reference to effort is a commitment to do the best and do what is right. Because what is subjective there? I'm swayed away by sometimes my greed, sometimes by my anger, sometimes the jealousies, greed, all of these very often affect our effort. I do something in order to harm somebody. So sometimes when we are not objective, our mind is controlled by greed, jealousy, hatred, then effort itself becomes distorted also. Then it is not an objective thing. So while performing an action, my mind is free from this, that I am fair, I am honest, I am hardworking, and I do what, in my opinion, is the right thing to do. Not allow those reactions to influence me. And while welcoming the outcome, objectively, I understand, I can't change it. What I cannot change, I accept gracefully. So this practice will pervade everywhere else, because only there are two things. Either we do things, that's called effort, or or the world does something to us, that's called the outcome. There are only two things in life. What you are doing to me is outcome of what I did in the past. What I am doing to you is the effort that I am making. So if we correct our attitude with these two, then it will be corrected for everything. You follow? Yes. Yes, to see things as they are. If it's a snake, see it as a snake and do what is required. If it's a snake, then stay away from it, you know. If it's a rope, if you think you need a rope, then you use it or you walk by. So snake, you see it as a snake. Don't hate it, because it is snake, it has all the right to be there, and you stay away from it, you follow? Meaning that we look upon things for what they are. If this poison, then it's poison. I don't hate the poison, but I don't consume it. You follow? I don't hate the snake, but I keep a distance. So you need to keep distances from things that are harmful. We don't hate them because they are harmful, but we keep the distance. I hate the snake. Why? Because it is like that. Snake cannot help but being a snake. So no point in hating a snake for it being a snake. I know that it can hurt me, so I keep a distance. You follow? So thus, when we are objective, then we can monitor our responses as the reality requires. Something requires to be picked up, something requires to be thrown away, something requires to be loved, something requires to keep a distance. You fondle something, you keep something away. What you do is determined by what the situation calls for, but the attitude is, it is all right as it is. Everything has a right to be what it is. And then I decide what I should do. Should I keep a distance? Should I associate? Not associate? Is my, but without hatred. Oh, but this fellow is like that. Let it be. What should I do? If I hate that person, then what I do is not going to be right. I may do injustice. So, no hatred. And no projection of attachment also. That's called objectivity. And then do what you think is appropriate. So, what you do will always be different depending upon what you are interacting with. But the attitude is the same. What is same is the attitude in the mind that you respect everything as it is. And what you do depends upon what the circumstances or the situation is. Then you keep away from something. That you friend, may be friends with something. You follow? Without hatred and without undue projection. Yes.
I have another question. You mentioned hard work. Can I get your definition of hard work?
Hard work?
Yeah.
Well, hard work means that we do not spare any effort.
Because what I mean is sometimes you feel like you're in a vortex. You know, some people call it like vortex, right? You are, you know, it's a good time to do it. Sometimes you try to achieve something, but it's at the right time. And you work hours and hours, nothing comes out. Another time, you can do the same thing in 5 minutes or 10 minutes. So I mean, there's like a time for everything, you know. If you're forced to deliver a certain thing and you work hard, you know, struggle, it's for the same outcome as maybe you wait a day or two, and then you feel, okay, now is the right time to do something, and you can do it in a very short time, and actually have a lot of joy.
Right. So use your judgment. Use your experience and decide what's the right time to do and what's the right way to do. If you are, if there's composure in your mind, if you're not acting out of fear, not acting out of insecurity, not acting out of reaction, then you'll be able to make a judgment. If judgment can be wrong, then we can learn. It's not that we are right all the time. Just because you are object, it doesn't mean you are right. Still depends upon your judgment. We can change. Learn and change. Okay. Right. Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamevavashishyate Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Hari Om.